You're listening to Marvelous Harry, a novel in five fractals, performed and written by Mark A. Rayner. For more information about where to get the book, go to marvelousharry.ca. Part 2. The Human Ideal. Chapter 1. Ariadne Thapiris worked at the Consumit drugstore near Bland Street and Dead White Guy Avenue. I think it would be fair to say she hated working there as much as I hated the idea of needing a special cream for toe fungus. But despite that, she was polite and pleasant with almost everyone who purchased something from the store. It was not their fault they needed genetically modified foods, mood drugs, panty liners, jock itch cream, and many other useful items that kept the minor evils of life at bay. Well, it was their fault, but she could hardly blame them for it without feeling like a hypocrite, particularly while she was working there. Ariadne was 22 years old. It looked more like she was 16. She was threateningly slender, had radiant black hair that came down to her shoulders, and beautiful skin, evidence that she wasn't 16. Her eyes were deep brown, almost to the point of being black pools, bottomless highland lakes you could stumble into in the fog, because he did not expect to find them there in the heather. That was how I met her. You know, metaphorically. At first I was taken with her eyes, and the sad look on her face. Even when she smiled at a customer, her face was delicate and pale, and she wore the Consumit polyester uniform with shameful dignity. She had the dignity, and the corporation got the shame. She was really very extremely unthinkably, but not anorexically, thin. She had a doll's wrists, and a less enlightened guy would say she was flat-chested. I saw self-respect and excellent posture. It was the day after my coffee with Helena, and I was in the store waiting for Nick to show up. Ariadne had caught my attention, and I watched her as she dealt with a long line of customers waiting to purchase their consumables. An ancient fellow was trying to buy a bottle of vitamins, and was having problems with getting the right change out of his wallet, one of those old-fashioned monstrosities that included a pouch for change, along with the usual slots for credit cards and cash. His face looked like he'd been visited, repeatedly, by the Wrinkle Fairy. And you could see that he was struggling to get the pennies out, his fingers betraying him at the crucial point of his purchase. Given the same situation, many checkout clerks might look exasperated or pop their chewing gum with an annoyance, glaring at the fumbling customer. The young bravo in line behind the pensioner was doing that. "Come on, man. Use a freaking bill. Use some cash. The pennies won't go bad." He was 19, if that. The skin, again, was a good clue. Unlike the other old men, this gent was not cantankerous with his senescence. In fact, he looked mortified. "Here, let me help you," Ariadne said, and gently pulled the wallet out of his hands. She found the right change, took it out of the wallet, and showed it to him. "Okay?" He nodded, grateful. She must have known he would be okay with it. A lot of people would be offended. Thus served, he tottered off, and the young man put his items down in front of Ariadne, annoyance still oozing off him. I spotted a wry smile as she looked at his stuff and rang it through efficiently, except for one item which would, inexplicably, not be read by the barcode. I couldn't see how she managed it. She picked up her phone and spoke into it, her voice booming through the store. "I need a price check on hemorrhoid medication." "What kind?" someone yelled from the pharmacy. "Oh, sorry," she spoke into the phone, telling everyone in the store that she needed a price check on a jumbo order of roid away. The middle-aged lady standing behind her, now cringing bravo, giggled. Yes, Ariadne had panache, even if she hated Consumit. My job with Gargantuan Enterprises was now officially over. I was a little sad not to have the opportunity to harass Bob with homosexual innuendo, but at least I was at loose ends again. I liked living that way. I would work for a while, however long the contract would last, and then I would just take some time, sometimes a month, sometimes longer, just hanging out with Nick and Max, and occasionally with Tom, Frank, and Peter when their time allowed. I hadn't had a steady girlfriend for years, and I wasn't really looking for one either. Even as I watched Ariadne, I wasn't thinking of her that way. Sexually, yes, but normally I like a woman with a bit more, curve to her. Marriage was even harder to imagine. Tom and Dina, for example. How weird was that? I suppose getting married is a normal thing, but except for Tom, none of my close circle of friends had taken the step. On the other hand, things would definitely start changing. I'd seen it happen to other friends. Outside of the small, good university clique I still hung out with, and it did change relationships. Without a partner, it was difficult for my married friends to invite me to couple-y kind of things. Still, without Tom around constantly, I imagine the other mechanical engineers, Peter and Frank, would disappear for a while. No doubt they were exploring a life where they wouldn't have to keep Tom in the dark. Frank and Peter were lovers and had been for many, many years, but they hadn't come out of the closet. This was largely due to Tom's homophobia. In a weird way, Tom was the third engineer in their mechanical troika, and it was a pivotal role. Still, they were nervous about their parents and their co-workers at the engineering firm where they both worked, too. I guessed a long time ago and Frank had confirmed it, swearing me to secrecy. Pete and Frank had been together since they were roommates back in the undergraduate days. Frank, Peter, Tom, Max, Nick, and myself had all gone away to the good university for our undergraduate studies. The first three studied engineering, and the rest of us took a variety of arts and humanities degrees. For most of us, our first degrees were appetizers, and we all went on to a main course of graduate studies. The engineers filled up on MBAs. I still don't know how Max somehow got into medical school. I did the philosophy thing. But Nick's undergrad in comparative literature was more than enough for him to chew on for the rest of his life. He joined me and Max briefly at the hated university, where we both did our grad work, but dropped out in the first semester. It all seemed like a long time ago. Not for Ariadne. She hadn't had her chance to go to college yet. She wanted to go, even if she didn't like the idea of buying into the whole education thing. Just another commodity to be purchased. But she knew that if she didn't get a degree, she was going to be stuck working for corporate ticks like Consume It for the rest of her life. Eventually, she'd want to have children, or even worse, she might get pregnant by accident. Then the one slave wage job would not be enough, and she'd have to find herself a second. Ariadne saw the other minimum wage slaves on the bus ride to work. They were tired, they were pallid, and not in the good supermodel kind of way. Exhausted, drudging through their days with no thought for play or joy, except for the snatches of bliss they could catch from their young children, before they grew older and discovered that they were too poor to expect much from life. Ariadne didn't know if an education would make her happier, but at least it would give her a chance. She needed to work one more year, saving as much as she could, and she'd be able to start part-time studies. These were the thoughts that were running through her mind as I waited in the store for Nick. After she dealt with her lineup, she noticed me waiting and asked if she could help me. "No, sir, I'm just waiting to meet someone." "Your girlfriend keeps you waiting?" "No, not my girlfriend, just a friend." "Whatever," she said, pretending to be cool. Nick arrived, and I wasn't able to carry on the conversation right away. "Sorry, Rob," he started. "Monkey just wants to play, no?" He had a small sheaf of papers clutched in his right hand. They were prescriptions that Max had given him. Methylphenidate, which was basically Ritalin, and Vicodin, a powerful painkiller. I'm pretty sure that Max knew Nick was just selling them to someone else, but it was his way of helping out a friend. "See, I told you it's a miracle he hasn't lost his license yet. They've got a good magazine section if you don't mind waiting for a bit more. I need to get these filled right away." "Okay." I wandered off, looking not for magazines, but the alluring Ariadne. She was back at the register, checking out more ointments and greeting cards. "Actually," I said to her as she finished with the last customer in line, "there is something you can help me with." "Yes, sir," she looked at her co-worker at the other till and said, "can you watch for now?" Her cohort smiled and nodded her head. I walked towards the family planning section and waited for her to catch up. As we walked down the aisle, I said, "I'd like to get a woman's perspective on this purchase." "Uh-huh." I stopped in front of the rack of condoms and her face went red. "What do you think is better?" I asked, watching for her reaction. She was getting past her embarrassment and verging on anger when I finished the question. "Roses or chocolates?" "We don't sell roses, sir," she said to me, the anger flashing out of those dark eyes, and then turning to something akin to appreciation when she realized I was smiling. "But I think roses are more romantic. You know this is the wrong aisle for chocolates." "Oh, sorry." "Probably not," she smiled at me. I liked her smile. A lot. "So would you prefer roses?" "Yes. No. Actually, I'd prefer orchids. Roses are done to death. So you get a lot of flowers." Her face went red again, almost angry, until she saw that I wasn't making fun of her. I wanted to know, because it wouldn't surprise me that she got a lot of roses. "No, I don't." "Then maybe I can bring you some, say, when you get off work?" She smiled at me again and said, "I get off work now, but not today. I have to be somewhere. But how about another time?" "I'd like that. My name is Rob. Rob Goodman," I said, unaccountably nervous. "I'm Ariadne, Rob Goodman," she grinned as she delivered the old joke. It was charming, though. "So how did you do that?" "Well, comedy boy, what you do is take your intention and purposefully misinterpret it. You meant to say just your first name, and then you thought to add your last name, but you said your first name again, and I meant the thing with the roid cream." "Oh," she smiled again. Funny. That smile was genuine, but the eyes remained sad, even when she was clearly enjoying herself. What you do is put just a tiny bit of your nail over one part of the bar, and that'll muck it up. Either that or you can push the void button as you run an item over the scanner. Both work pretty well. I love that she said, muck it up. You little devil, I said. Well, you showed him. He'll have to clean off his belly the way he slunk out of here. Meh, he deserves it. The old guy was just having a motor control problem. It does happen when you get older. What do you know about getting older, I asked. Well, clearly not as much as you, but I did have grandparents for a while. She was good. Are you always this saucy? Saucy, she smiled. Actually, I'm being restrained because of our consumate customer behavior service policy. I'm not allowed to say anything of a sexual nature, even while I'm standing in front of a wall of condoms. To tell you the truth, I'd forgotten all about them, and I grinned. Actually, while we're on that topic, I do have a question. She raised an eyebrow and said, oh, really? Yes. I said, thinking, shit, now what do I say? The only thing that popped into my head was a silly joke I'd received from one of my moronic friends, probably Max, via email. Two old ladies are outside their nursing home having a smoke when it started to rain. One of the ladies, Mavis, pulled out a condom, cut off the end, put it over her cigarette, and continued smoking. The other lady, Dolores, asks, what's that? Mavis answers, a condom, this way my cigarette doesn't get wet. You can get them at any drugstore. The next day, Dolores goes to the drugstore and tells the pharmacist she wants a box of condoms. The guy, obviously embarrassed, looks at her strangely. She is, after all, over 80 years old. But very delicately asks what brand she prefers. Doesn't matter, son, as long as it fits a camel. She gave me a sympathy laugh and said, okay, that's a joke, not a question. And kind of a lame joke, too, but I still want the rain check. Here's my number. She took the pen and pad of paper out of her consummate smock pocket and wrote it down. The pen used purple ink. And why did I find that strangely exciting? What the hell is wrong with me? I have to take off, she said. It would be good if you could work on your material a bit before we go out. She grinned at me. For a second, her eyes glittered with amusement, and no trace of sorrow lingered. By the time I caught up with Nick, he'd already purchased his drugs, and we were ready to go. As we left the store, I noticed the king of gag himself, Ted Shute, sitting in his Porsche, obviously waiting for someone. I pulled on Nick's sleeve to slow him down and watched as Ariadne got into a shiny red roadster, and they screamed away from the curb. Ariadne saw me watch, and the look on her face could only be called despair. Chapter 2. Spider was out of the hospital and trying to understand why they were sitting in Seedy's feculent Hyundai outside a mansion on Pill Hill. I still don't get it. Why are we here? You know a cop is going to come by any time. Some of the richest people in town live here, he asked. Seedy rubbed the bridge of his nose, noticing a pimple there as he did so. He popped it. We're here because Blossom's little friend is loaded, or her dad is, anyway. Blossom's friend? Hippolyta, Seedy said, trying not to sound exasperated as he felt. Spider was a half-wit, he knew, but it was only the rare occasion when this actually mattered. Spider didn't look too good right now, either, though he was still Brad Pitt compared to Seedy. Spider's broken nose had been set and was bandaged. This gave his voice a nasally tone and made him sound more querulous than usual, or perhaps just whiny. His various knife wounds were hidden by his clothes, but his face seemed sallow and waxy, particularly under his eyes, which were blackened by the broken nose and starting to fade to an ugly eggplant-slash-yellowish color. Who the fuck is Polly? Lyta, you know, big boots, always pouting, glove cigarettes, Hippolyta. Well, that bitch. Why did you say, what kind of freaky name is Hippolyta? It's a Greek thing. Spider looked more pained than when he had stabbed as he thought about this for a moment. Like Hercules, his bitch or something, Seedy said. That's cool. Well, it's her name. But why are we here? Aren't you worried about a cop seeing us, Spider said? Actually, now that you mention it, I am. Probably not the best thing to sit here in daylight. I just wanted to see what the house looked like. Whose house? Seedy rubbed the bridge of his nose again. No zit to distract him from Spider's idiocy this time. Lyta's. She's a rich bitch? Don't come much richer. Her dad owns that, Spider said, pointing to the Phallus building. From the elevation of Pill Hill, you could actually look down on it, glistening in the coital afternoon sunshine. Whoa. Yep, I'm thinking about something big, Seedy said, starting the car, which came to life with a noisy rattle. The muffler needed to be replaced, and Seedy made a mental note to fix it before they proceeded with their plan, assuming he could A, explain it to Spider, and B, Spider was willing to participate, and C, he was able to get Blossom to help. What? They drove past a police cruiser, the cop noticing them as they went by, but not flicking on his lights. Seedy wasn't too nervous, as the car was currently drug-free, at least as far as he knew. I think we should kidnap Hippolyta, Lyta, he added, not wanting to hear Spider mangle the name again. Whoa. No? Sound too dangerous to you? No, it's just like, real. That's real, dude. Oh yeah, I think we can get her in on it. The rich bitch? Yeah, she seems bored. A lot of the rich bitches are mad at their parents, and would do anything to piss them off. Patty Hearst, you know? No kidding. Patty Hearst. I had no idea, Spider said. Seedy concentrated on his driving, trying not to laugh. The drug dealer knew better than to laugh at Spider. In addition to being a complete dolt, he was a thug. It was amazing he hadn't been incarcerated for a very long time. As it was, Spider had done a few short stints in jail for bar brawls, but he'd never been charged for a serious offense. Actually, he was more than a thug. Seedy recognized Spider's self-control was a fault line. Someday the plates would shift and the minor grumbles of violence would turn into a major quake. People would die, and Seedy hoped to be far away from the disaster when it happened. Yep, I think we should plan to do it, even if she won't take part. It'll be easy. I'll spike her dragon and she'll be down for the count. Then we just keep her under during the whole thing. That way she can't ID us or anything. How do we get the money? I thought of that, too. We buy a cheap cell phone and deliver that to her dad, along with a Polaroid and our message. We call him on the phone and arrange the drop. When we have the cash, we call him back on the phone to let him know where to find her. Cool. Easy, eh? Way. So are you in? Totally, dude, Spider said, as enthusiastically as he could with a broken nose. He looked pained for a minute. But what do I do? You're the lookout. You're the muscle. You're the man. Cool. I should have a gun, right? Yeah, I want a gun. Don't you have one? Like I need one. It's not like I'm some gangbanger or anything. Then why do you need one now? You know, just in case. In case of what? What if the cops come after us? We'll be better off without guns in that case. Pussy, seriously, if the plan doesn't work, and they figure out who we are, we'd be better off not having a gun. You do more time with a gun. Yeah, but what if someone else learns about our plan? Someone else? Yeah, like your tongs or wherever you get your junk from. How would they find out? I don't know. They know stuff. Seedy looked at Spider. Shit, he thought. Was he going to tell them? They would want in on it for sure if they did. What was more dangerous, the tongs? Spider with the pistol? Or Spider pissed off? Okay, Seedy agreed. We'll get you a gun, but first I gotta meet a guy. Then the pistol. I want a fucking assault rifle, Spider enthused. I don't know where you're going to keep that hidden. Shit, good point, Spider admitted. Okay, but one of them Glocks with lots of shots and shit. Seedy wasn't enthusiastic about a Glock-toting Spider. The dolt would probably end up shooting himself, or worse, him. On the other hand, he never knew when you might need a gun, and perhaps he could get one himself, too, just in case Spider did get out of control, or let someone else know about their plan. Chapter 3. So we're still on for Thursday night? Shute asked Ariadne as she got out of the car. She sighed and tried to smile. It didn't come out right, but Shute seemed oblivious to her misery. Yeah, I guess so. It's not like you've got a choice, do you? Sensing her reluctance, he said, Tell you what, kiddo. You go out with me tomorrow night and do one more thing for me, and I'll send you to college. How's that sound? Really? Yep. I'll put a trust fund together for you that you can use. I'll even see about getting you into whatever college tickles your fancy, as long as it's not too far from here. So much for escaping from him that way, Ariadne thought. But it was too good an opportunity to ignore. She could start in the fall, full time. Okay, Thursday night. Don't you want to know what the other thing is? Sure, she agreed. Sorry, I can't tell you yet, but I'm pretty sure you'll hate it. But you'll pay for my tuition and living expenses if I do it? No strings attached? Shute looked at her closely, his eyes thin with suspicion. What do you mean, no strings? Like, you're not going to tell me what I have to study, or who my friends should be, or any horse shit like that. Horse shit? It's a perfectly valid phrase. Yeah, if you grew up in the 1940s. I'm not sure that I can promise you no horse shit, though, Ariadne. What if you start hanging out with more of Hippolyta's friends? I don't want you like your older sister or my daughter. I didn't work as hard as I did just to catch some junkie's disease because of who you're fucking for drugs. Ted, you know I'd never... That's what Phaedra said. Then it was, I'd never do it on a regular basis, and now, well, it seems to suit your lifestyle, only because you still love the loser, Shute said. Phaedra's not a loser. Your whole family are losers, even if you're all beautiful. Johnny wasn't a loser. Well, that's your opinion. Why don't you tell her, you miserable turd? Johnny said, appearing in the seat his little sister had so recently vacated. Shute jumped back, actually surprised. You think after all these years, Shute said to Johnny. After all these years, what? Ariadne asked. Look, do you want to go to college or not? You should have already sent her, you evil blood tick, Johnny whispered. Your fortune is based on what you stole from me. It should all be hers. It's all you'll get, Ariadne, Shute smiled. Except for the pleasure of my company from time to time, when I have a hankering for your pale, fresh flesh. I will get you, Johnny said. If he'd had them, he would have clenched his teeth. Okay, but no horseshit. A police cruiser pulled up behind the Porsche, and an officer got out of the car. She was about 5'6", and looked like she could bench-press a smart car. She had one hand on her holster as she approached the Porsche, keeping one eye out for traffic that was slowly working its way around them. During his brief conversation with Ariadne, the road had gotten congested because Shute was blocking the street. Good afternoon, sir. Do you realize this is a no-stopping zone between the hours of 3 and 7? The officer said. Her voice was a mellow alto, and she sounded bored. She was wearing sunglasses, so Shute had no way of reading her eyes. Sorry, officer, he was just dropping me off, Ariadne said. Shut up, Shute said to Ariadne. I'll deal with it. Please don't tell your daughter to shut up, sir. She was just trying to help. Shute did not disabuse the policewoman. He didn't say anything for a moment. So you're just going to sit there? Johnny asked. Sir, the police officer said. I will leave in a second. I just want to finish my conversation. Well, I'm sorry, sir, but you're blocking traffic. You'll have to finish your conversation later. Please move the car. Do you know who I am? Shute asked. Oh, Christ, Johnny said. Who are you now, Donald Trump? She doesn't care who you are. I don't care who you are, the officer said. See, Johnny said. Okay, I'm going, Ariadne added. Smell you later, Dad. Johnny laughed. Don't you go anywhere, Shute roared, drowning out the sounds of the traffic, the honking of horns. The policewoman took a step back alongside the Porsche and thumbed her walkie-talkie, requesting backup, the rest of it lost in the noise of the street. Excellent. Now you're going to get arrested, Johnny said. I'll yell if I want to. Okay, Ted, she's just called someone, Johnny said. The ghostly figure of her dead brother looked up at her, and Shute watched. Yep, she's really beautiful, Shute whispered to the ghost. Better than her older sister, even. What? Ariadne asked. The police officer returned and said to Shute forcefully, I'd like your license, registration, and proof of insurance, please. Shute said. Okay. He leaned over to the glove compartment, twisting his body so that he didn't come in contact with the spectral form of Johnny, and pulled out his documents. He handed them to her and said pleasantly, Now, go insert whatever you need to in the paperwork, little lady, and I'll finish my conversation. Even with the sunglasses, it was pretty clear the thing the little lady most wanted to do was unholster her weapon and insert it somewhere. Instead, she swallowed her anger and returned to the cruiser. Another police car appeared at the end of the street, making its way up through the traffic. So I was saying, Shute asked. You're saying you'd send her to college. No horseshit, Johnny said. No horseshit, Ariadne said, almost an echo. Right, Shute agreed. I reserve some privileges, but for the most part, you'll be on your own. Besides, I'm starting to get bored with your family, Ariadne. I'm only seeing you for one reason. He looked directly into the spectral eyes of Johnny. Well, yeah, I figured that, Ariadne said. But it's not right. Yep, he grinned, gunning the engine. Close the door. I gotta go. What about your ticket, she asked. Yeah, slime mold. Don't you want to wait to talk to the nice police lady and get your spanking? That's not what that was about, Shute warned Johnny. What was about, Ariadne asked. Just go, Shute ordered Ariadne. She closed the door and looked at him with despair. The police officer returned and gave Shute his documents, including the citation. You know, for a corporate bigwig, you get a lot of traffic tickets. Oh, so you know who I am. Sure, once I saw your license. Just because I'm a cop doesn't mean I don't read. I know the cost of this ticket doesn't matter to you, but you still can't do whatever you want, no matter how rich you are. What are you, a cop or a commie? Have a nice day, and you might want to have someone look at the scratch on your car. What scratch? She walked back and pointed to a place above his rear driver's side tire. Right here. Shute got out of the car. Where? I don't see any scratch. Yeah, right here, she said. But I have to ask you to get back in your car and get going. This is a no-stopping zone. She put her hand back on her holster. If you don't comply, I'll be obliged to arrest you, Mr. Shute. He was about to take another step forward, and then he stopped. Shit, you really would, wouldn't you? Do you have any idea what a career-limiting move that would be? Step back into your car and comply, sir. Ariadne watched with a fascinated horror. In a way, she hoped Chute didn't do it, and then resisted arrest. But on the other hand, she would then have to testify against him, and she didn't know if she could do that. Almost as if he was hearing her thoughts, Chute said, I don't know, Ariadne. This could be bad for your sister. Please get back in the car, Ted. Yeah, you nitwit. Get back in the car, Johnny said. She will arrest you. Hell, she'd like to beat your face into the top of the car. She's thinking exactly how she'll do it when you resist arrest. You might not be sure, but I am. Okay, Officer Dyke, Chute said, returning to his car. He took a quick look at his rearview mirror and memorized the cruiser's license plate. Are you really that petty? Johnny said. You tell me, Kreskin, what am I thinking? The Porsche peeled away, nearly sideswiping another car as it tried to pull out in front of him. You didn't even say goodbye to Ariadne, Johnny said. So what? Ariadne watched him pull away, feeling like she was going to throw up. For a moment, she thought she could see another figure in the car beside him. You have been listening to Marvelous Harry, a novel in 5 fractals, written and performed by Mark A. Rayner. For more information about where you can purchase a copy of Marvelous Harry, go to marvelousharry.ca.